On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Brian Buck, formerly of the Colorado Rockies organization and currently at Sparta Science. Brian, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me on here. This is great. So just a little bit about myself. My background is really in baseball. I mean, all sports growing up, but to college and had a slight opportunity to play a few years of minor league ball with the St. Louis Cardinals, was drafted by them in 2007 and played a few years there where I was extremely injured, extremely injury plagued, I should say, from my own lack of training knowledge, is what I'll blame it on to this day. But basically came up through baseball, after I was done playing, went back and finished my kinesiology degree from Arizona State. And from there, actually, I immediately got a job as a strength and conditioning intern in professional baseball with the Anaheim Angels. And I'd had 1 year there where I was in Orem and did the Pioneer League and actually learned so much in that 1 year. It was extremely valuable for me. And then ended up spending the next 4 years with the Colorado Rockies, both as a minor league strength coach and then as the assistant in the big leagues, and then eventually as our coordinator in Scottsdale, Arizona. 2016 was my last full season in professional baseball. And then from there, you know, was still very passionate about training and being in baseball. I ended up getting an opportunity to go and work for Scott Boras at his agency in Orange County and basically train his clientele exclusively. And for me, that was still a really good way to be a part of the game that I loved, but not necessarily be in the team setting, you know, really spending those long hours and days at the yard. So I took that opportunity and I hopped on it, and that was it was a very good opportunity for me. You know, looking at that and how it all worked, and you know, really my passion, and it has been for a long time, is really the strength, not only the strength coach aspect, but really the science aspect and looking at the whys and what causes what. So, you know, a mentor of mine, named Phil Wagner, who is the CEO and founder of Sparta Science, you know, had been reaching out to me, and it just made sense at the end of the day to end up there. I already had a great relationship with him and his staff from my time with the Rockies and consulting with Sparta Science. So I'm currently a performance analyst for Sparta Science, dealing primarily with our customers and helping them to see what they want to see, and really doing a whole lot other than that as well, but really enjoying my time at Sparta Science.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of people get into the field because they played and they got hurt and they don't want others to get hurt. So right there with you. So let's go into that Sparta Science first, and then we can kind of work backwards towards your pro ball days. You said you're a performance analyst. Kind of go over what you do there, what Sparta Science is in general, how it's been implemented, and maybe why you chose it, big picture.
Yeah, so I mean, Sparta Science is a data analytics company. Basically, I think a lot of people view Sparta Science as a force plate company, and it's really not. It's really a data company trying to help provide some direction and training. And really, you know, back in 2013, when I first started using force plates and analytics to drive the training process, I was so unsure of it. I didn't realize, you know, how a force plate was going to tell me how to train. And I was pretty resistant to it early on, to be honest with you. It was new, it was different. And I think, like anyone, a little bit of fear of change and trying something new was definitely there. But I really started to see some good things with it. And over time, that's ended up why I'm here now, is because I saw a lot of good things. But really, you know, Sparta Science is not a sports company. We work in sports, we're really involved in military. healthcare, physical therapy, return to play, you name it. So really anyone that's trying to optimize their performance. So my current role with Sparta Science is basically a performance analyst, but in that sense, when somebody new signs on, like for example, the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, is a new partner of ours, when they sign on with us to use our software, I go basically go out there and I sit down with strength and conditioning, sports medicine, and I talk about the science behind the variables, how to use the software, what to look for, my own anecdotal findings using it, and really just see what they want to see the most out of the software. And then it's kind of up to me to help them see what they're looking to see and help them drive their training process or return to play process.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So specifically maybe in professional baseball, how have you implemented it or maybe seen other organizations implementing it?
Yeah. I think the Colorado Rockies, when I was there, I think we were kind of the first team using it. And I think we were looked at as kind of crazy for doing some of the things we were. At least that's how I felt internally. I felt like people were kind of looking at us like, that's crazy, man. Like, you guys are using force plates and you're having that drive your training process. And really, we kind of limped into it and we said, okay, you know, everyone's doing the FMS and everyone's doing these assessments and maybe we'll continue to do that, but we're really going to look at this force data as well. And then I think eventually we started to see a lot out of the force data and maybe a lot of the same things that people see on other assessments. And so we kind of eliminated these other assessments from a practicality standpoint, which is a lot easier and more simple to, you know, assess people on the force plate. And we could get a lot from there based on how each individual produces force. And, you know, just comparing like two completely different athletes, one maybe being extremely elastic and the other one being more long and lanky and produces force by momentum. I mean, really, the training is going to be a little bit different for each and the risk analysis is going to be different for each. So kind of deciding on, because we only get limited amount of time with these athletes, really trying to see how we can maximize that time. And you know how it is in season, you're getting maybe a couple full bodies in a week. And if you can really maximize that time instead of maybe just going through, you know, some pretty basic things, you can really, it really makes a difference in the long run.
So how are you determining those like training programs from that? You said there might be only two total bodies a week and one individual might be doing one thing versus the other thing. How are you determining that with this technology?
Yeah. So there's a few assessments on in Sparta software. And one of them is the counter movement jump or the jump. And we're really looking at breaking up that force time curve into three specific parts that we have seen be extremely meaningful into how athletes sequence and how they produce force. So really looking at, first off, that eccentric rate of force development, that average eccentric rate of force development, and then looking at the relative concentric rate of force development, and then looking at overall concentric impulse or how long it takes the athlete to produce force. So it sounds like a lot initially if you're not looking at it, but if you can break it down like that, you can really see the difference in trained and untrained athletes, compensatory movements based off previous injuries perhaps, and a lot of things are shown through the counter movement jump. And obviously it doesn't replace the experts. It doesn't replace the coaches that are in it every day and that are seeing it with their own eyes. But a lot of times it can validate what you're seeing or validate the program that you're running. And really, I think, give the strength coach and the sports med professional really good feedback into validating what they're doing, because we often see good coaches get let go because of wins and losses. And that doesn't mean that they didn't do their job. So I think really validating good coaches is a big part of it.
Yeah. It seems like that's kind of a thing with the technology, is not necessarily going to take over, the coaches, but it's just another tool for them to, like you said, validate what they're seeing and, Maybe there is something that they're missing that that's going to help with. So were you doing counter movement jumps every day, or was it just before lifts and then adjusting lifts accordingly? How are you going about that?
Yeah, so my time with the Rockies, we were trying to get a scan or a counter movement jump basically every 3 to 4 weeks or after a phase of training. So at that point, we could really look and dial in what adaptation took place from that mesocycle or whatever it was, and then say, okay, this is going in the direction that we had planned on it, or this is not. We need to go back to the drawing board and figure this out. So that's how we were using it at the time, and that is pretty popular with our users and how they will use the counter movement jump as well. We've also seen a lot of partners of ours using it as a readiness test, so to speak, and really looking at that eccentric rate of force development on a daily basis, meaning you'll get higher scores when you're potentiated and you'll get lower scores when you're fatigued. And a lot of them are doing cross-referencing with that and their HRV or their questionnaires or whatever else they're collecting. And I think that's the valuable piece is, you know, really cross-referencing, because there isn't an end-all be-all, but really how can you paint the best picture you can to help these athletes?
That's like gold, man, is just combining different things to get that picture, to get that ultimate result for the athlete, right? The more data that we have that we can use that's beneficial to them. And it sounds like it's simple enough that they can understand. It sounds like the way you were using it was, okay, we did this training 3 to 4 weeks. Let's test. Okay, this is what happened for you. Now you're going here with this. And I bet that probably creates a lot of buy-in from the athletes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I feel that transparency can be so big for buy-in with athletes. I mean, if you're constantly programming without them knowing why they're doing something, or you're constantly assessing something, but you're never really sharing the results with them, you can quickly lose, you can lose an athlete's attention. And if they don't know why something's being done, the process isn't going to run nearly as smooth. And I know, obviously, it took time to build this trust with these athletes because they were new to it, just as we were as coaches. But you know, year two, year three, year four, there was an extreme amount of transparency to the point where they would do the jump scan, and right in front of them, we would program in front of them and tell them why we were going to include certain movements. So really, when it came time for them to come into the gym and train, they knew why they were getting certain movements, and they knew why you know, we were giving it to them and where they were lacking and where their weaknesses were. So I think it felt like, you know, it brought some fun back into training, not only for the athlete, but really the coach as well. I mean, you know how it is. During the season, man, it's a grind. It's a long season, and we're constantly traveling. We're not getting much sleep, and it's even worse for players. I mean, they're dealing with a lot more stresses. And so being able to add in the whys and make some things fun and really challenged to see, you know, these improvements, especially over a long season, it can be very valuable to these athletes, and buy-in is constantly improved when you're that transparent.
Yeah, and it sounds like your staff as well as your players are buying in. Like, there's nothing better than when you give a guy a program and he's like, oh, this makes sense to me and this is going to help me. And they're like, I'm all in on it. You just feel really good about yourself because you're like, okay, I'm helping this guy. He sees the value of what we're doing and I know he's going to get after it now.
No, for sure. And I think, you know, a big misconception in baseball, at least it used to be, was that if you did – you know, if you use Sparta software, you had to do these specific exercises. And while we have a lot of studies done on specific exercises and their impact on the force time curve, we also know that everyone's philosophy is not the same. And really, when choosing, you know, how when you have your philosophy and using the software, nothing changes. You still have your philosophy. It's just really understanding these concepts and how you can improve these weak variables and help people to move better through your current program as of now. And it's not always what you're adding in, but usually what you're taking away, to be honest, and what they already do really well.
I gotcha. It sounds like it's a really good software and it can create a lot of buy-in and a lot of good immediate feedback. And it sounds like you're all over. I mean, we were talking before we started recording and you're all over the place. So It seems like it's definitely something that's catching fire and moving organizations in the right direction.
Absolutely. And you know how it is too, in any organization and not just baseball, but there's oftentimes these kind of silos of like, hey, you guys are strength and conditioning over there and we're athletic training over here. And there's not a whole lot of conversation. And sometimes there's not a whole lot of agreement on things. Some guys feel that they're too aggressive and some feel that they're too conservative. And it's kind of this back and forth, and really, success is going to come for that athlete when we all align and are talking the same language. And I think, you know, as my last year with the Rockies being the coordinator, I was basically our return to play coordinator. So all of the hurt guys or post-op guys would be sent to Scottsdale, and I would get them from day one post-op or day one post whatever it was. And so doing these other assessments that we have, whether it's our lower or upper body balance, or our one leg landing assessment, like when I would speak to the athletic training staff, we were looking at the same information. It wasn't, well, I'm doing this and you're doing that. It's, we were speaking the same language through the data and making decisions based off this objective feedback that we were getting, instead of, well, I want to do this and you want to do that. So really trying to put those two rooms together and remember this isn't about us or our egos. It's about the athlete.
Agree with you 100%, man. At the end of the day, we're just trying to help the athletes get better. And like you said, the more you can put your ego aside and speak that same language, and they see that from you, the continuity between different silos, so to speak, I think it goes a long way. So I appreciate you sharing all that information, but I am interested in your pro ball days as well. So I want to hear your best professional baseball story that you have, either as a player, as a coach, as a coordinator. I want to hear a good story from you.
I mean, it may not be the best you'll hear, but I do, I still giggle about this from time to time, and mostly because of the guy that I shared it with. I still consider him a friend. He's a goof. You know, he's a University of California guy. So a Berkeley guy, obviously a little bit different than most, thinks a little bit different than most, but would just laugh with me at the same thing. And, you know, we were both young guys in pro ball, and we didn't really know each other that well, but we're like, we're going to the Midwest League as players. And we're like, you know, hey man, I don't got a roommate. Do you? And he's like, no. Nope. We're like, all right, let's rip it. I guess we're roommates. And we get out to Iowa and we get this apartment, you know, probably 20 minutes from the field. And we're like, well, shoot, man, we don't even have wheels. I mean, how are we going to get around? And so we basically Craigslist it, looking for a vehicle. And we find this truck that's listed on there for $360. And it's like all gray. And the hood is like this brand new paint job, smoking red color. And we're like, this is it right here. This is the deal. So we call this guy up. Sure enough, he drives it over like half hour later. We're like, this guy is just trying to get rid of this thing. And so he pulls up. And the first thing that I notice is that this exhaust pipe is hanging on by strings that this guy apparently tied together with his own hands. I mean, and it wasn't even a good tie job. He probably did it about 10 minutes before he rolled over. And so we're like, we're not even considering getting insurance. We're not trying to do any of like the right things to keep it, you know, lawfully correct, so to speak. But we're just like two young kids going, we need wheels to the park. And, so we each scrape together our money and give this guy cash for the thing. And after he's got the cash in his hand, he's about ready to take off. He's like, oh yeah, just so you know, when you're going around a corner, you might want to hang on to the door because they'll fly open. Well, what we basically realized is after the transaction is made and we are now owners of this sweet ride, is that basically on each side, whatever corner you'd go around, the door would fly open. And it took the first time that I almost lost my life to really like say, this is real deal. This is how it works. And so every time we basically hang on to each other's seatbelts that were, you know, nice and tight, and we go around a corner and whoever wasn't driving would hold the other door shut. And that's how we got back and forth to the yard. So, I mean, it just, if you've been in the minor leagues and you've grinded through the minor leagues, this is no different. And it was just two young, stupid kids trying to make it to the field and back.
How hard did you get worn out by the other guys on the team?
actually not bad, because it was like, either we're like, hey man, sorry, we have our own ride, and everyone else was like hopping in the back of someone else's car, and it was like, hey, let's drop 15 people on the way back to the field. So, you know, we felt legitimate. We felt like, hey, we got our own ride. Where's your car at? And so we weren't that mad at it. I didn't even think about the consequences at the time, but I ended up telling my parents, like, hey, we got this truck, and they're like, are you kidding me? Have you insured it? And all this thing. And I'm like, insurance? What are you talking about?
Low levels in minor league baseball are incredible for good stories like that. So don't sell yourself short. That's a really good story.
I mean, yeah, we could go on for days about the quality of food. We could go on for days about, you know, people paying rent and their whole paycheck, you know, to just – it's the minor leagues, for the people that don't know and haven't been inside it, they don't realize that the people cleaning the seats probably get paid more than the people actually playing. And it's really, you're just chasing the dream, and your eyes are on the prize. You're not even worried about the other things. You just say, hey, this is my shot. I'm going to give it everything I got. It's not until, unfortunately, later on that you kind of look back and realize how uninformed you were and how just you could have done so much better. And really, in my role now and when I was with the Rockies, was just like trying to give back and put these people on the right path. Like, listen, learn from the stupid things that I did and don't do them.
They had you with firsthand experience then, so they probably could relate a little bit better than some other people who, like you said, have no idea what's going on in the minor leagues.
Exactly. And, you know, and you're doing the same thing now. You're just trying to steer these guys in the right direction. And you've seen some people do it wrong. You've seen a few do it right. And it's like, at the end of the day, man, we're trying to help you get to the show, period.
That is 100%. There's like, when guys question you and you're like, yeah, I'm purposely trying to make you worse by making you do this. Like, I'm solely here for the purpose of trying to get you to move up. That's it.
Seriously. Yeah. So, you know, that's really, you know, it's a role, and there's a lot of turnover in baseball, and I understand why there can be lack of trust between players and coaches, just because they see so much turnover themselves. And why are they supposed to trust you? Right. So there's so many, and they're introduced to a new coach at every level, sometimes that they've never met. And so, you know, our roles as the strength and conditioning professionals, like, oftentimes you have to really build that trust, and it's not just handed over at the beginning. And that's a big part of the gig. So the more authentic you can be, and the second that they realize that you're there to help them, the moment it's going to go a lot easier for everybody.
100%. 100%. Yeah. So you've seen a lot now. You've been all over the place. You've been in and out of baseball. What do you believe in within strength and conditioning that others think you are crazy for believing?
Well, I mean, I can go back to that time early on with the Rockies when we kind of decided to make a decision and do some things differently. And I remember that feeling from my other peers in baseball, from other people that I would hear people talking about. We started running 3 times a week, if that, which was, you know, not very traditional for baseball. We, you know, the whole Sunday fun day, no run day thing was like no longer a thing. Even today, most people are still conditioning a lot very traditionally and doing it that way. And however it works for your program, do it. But I think at the time for us, we kind of made a decision that, you know, we really wanted to keep guys fresh in order to produce these, you know, as much force as they can late into the season. And we kind of altered conditioning, you know, to just short burst work, and then really got our aerobic capacity work in through density work in the weight room. So everything was on a timer in the weight room. We knew that we could get them in the correct positions biomechanically, but if we limited rest time, that's where we were really going to skin the cat for that aerobic capacity piece, instead of maybe beating it up on the warning track doing some other kind of distance work. So, you know, everyone kind of has their own way of doing it. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong way. I just think that was a way we chose to do it. And people are like, you're only running 2 or 3 times a week. These guys aren't going to make it. They're not going to last in August. And we eventually saw really, really good results with that. keeping guys fresh late in the season. You know, so that's, you know, that's just the conditioning side. From the lifting side, we were looked at as crazy as doing singles in season. We were lifting heavy in season, and I think, again, that was kind of looked at as kind of crazy to do, and we kind of backed it with, well, we want to keep these guys strong, and, you know, and we did a lot of things. We lifted heavy. We did triples. We did singles. We did a lot of things in season, and I think at the time it was looked at as kind of crazy, but really we saw some success with it, and not that I'm saying it's the right way or wrong way to do it. I think everyone has their own way, but it, we were looked at as kind of out of our minds for doing that at the time.
That's really interesting, man. Really, really interesting thoughts there. But like, yeah. You said, I think as long as you have a reason for doing what you're doing, then run with it. Like, if you're seeing results with it and you have a reason, do it.
100%. And you could argue the complete opposite to me about a different program. And when your reasons are all in place, I'm good with it. It's just really, again, having a plan and executing based off what you think is right. And I can, you know, I can see the exact opposite program being beneficial to a certain extent if you believe that, you know, that if you looked at certain work as tempo work and building that anaerobic capacity and it wasn't fatiguing them and you were getting your conditioning and you were skinning your cat different ways, hey, I've seen that work as well. So it's really like, hey, what's our philosophy and what do we believe in and what are we going to stick to? And also believing it when we tell the players what our program is and having that, you know, conviction of like, I believe this is going to work and this is going to work and we've seen it work. You know, so players can quickly sniff out uncertainty. And any smart player is going to question things if you're uncertain or if they're not, or if they don't understand the why. So, I think education within an organization is huge from the top down. Why are we doing this? What do we believe in? And not everyone is always going to align from the top down, but having a reason 100% for what you do every day is huge.
I just had this conversation yesterday, and you're in this field, you're always right and you're always wrong. But if you have the reasons, and that's kind of really the big thing, is how you get players to buy into it, is if you are confident in it and you truly believe in it, they're going to say, okay, this guy actually does believe in this stuff. He does it himself or whatever. Like, let's do it. Where, like you said, they can sniff out uncertainty. They're not stupid by not by any means. They know right away when you're like, I don't agree with this, but my coordinator made me do it. And they're like, oh, well, we're not doing it.
Yeah, you'll quickly lose them. And, you know, there's so many resources these days for these athletes to look at. They're not oblivious to training methods. Like, they see it every day on Instagram, they see it every day on Twitter, whether those be good or bad methods, they see it and they're intrigued by it. So they're going to want to ask questions, they're going to want to do things that are sexy. You know, obviously that's what they want to do, and a lot of times, you know, as you know, the bare bones is just truthfully what works. The old methods, the tried and true, are oftentimes the best ones that work. Now, you know, I would say that it doesn't stop at being questioned by the players. You will also get questioned by sport coaches, and these coaches were once players and remember being in the quote unquote best shape of their life doing something at this point in their life. And so a lot of times it really isn't even just defending it to players, but sport coaches too. So, and if they don't believe in you, I mean, their vibes can be put off onto the players, and the players will feel that as well. So really, it's a tight knit clubhouse, and if you lose the buy-in of players, it can quickly all go.
Especially in baseball, just there's a lot of like older school guys, which again, not right or wrong,
right?
But they have their thoughts of how they used to do it back in the day. So being able to have those conversations and explain your program to them and get the coaches to buy in goes a long way with the players as well. So, especially in baseball.
100%. Baseball is, it's quickly improving and it's quickly moving forward with the processes and everything, but there's so much tradition in the game that is so hard to fight. And oftentimes as a strength coach, it can be frustrating because you know, I think a good coach is very, very much stays up on their research and reading. And to have that challenged or forced to do maybe an old, you know, outdated method that you feel there's a better way to do it, it can be frustrating at times. And that's when, you know, I've seen this hunger. And this is one thing I noticed when I was a coordinator and when I was hiring coaches is these young kids that are coming into the field now are so more advanced and a lot of them have done a very good job of preparing themselves and reading research and reading books and doing all this stuff that I've been blown away by the young populations coming into it now. And it's not just baseball. Any sport can be frustrating when certain things are traditional, and that's why they've always been done. And honestly, I have a hard time not questioning it. And I want young coaches to feel like they can question these methods as well, because I had nothing but respect for any young coach that I brought in that questioned my ways. If they didn't question it, I had questions.
Yeah, the yes man doesn't really go very far. It's more of, like you said,
I don't want.
Don't I want be conversation. Afraid.
It's conversation. And we have meetings now at Sparta Science, educational meetings. And if we don't leave without conflict or somebody arguing a point, it was not successful. And we kind of, you know, Phil Wagner kind of brought that to the Rockies. It was like, listen, we don't all agree, so don't everyone be quiet. Stand up and say what you're thinking and say what's on your mind, and let's throw it all on the table and let's hash it out, because we're all going to leave as friends here. And we're all going to have a lot more respect for each other if we get our thoughts on the table and we, you know, kick it around a little bit and hash it out. So, you know, I think it's no different within a strength staff, because not everyone's going to see the same stuff and not everyone's going to have the same upbringing. So I really think it's refreshing when young coaches challenge the status quo or young coaches say, well, what about this? You know what I'm saying? So I always appreciated that from a young coach. And so that could be, you know, for any of the younger listeners that are trying to get into the field, I think that's valuable. Right or wrong, I think it's valuable to have a backbone and to really show your beliefs.
Yeah, it kind of comes full circle to what we talked about earlier, is if you put your ego aside and just look at the big picture of our program is strictly to get guys better, I don't think there's any real conflict in being afraid to speak up. Like if you speak up, hey, let's try this instead of this, it's only going to make your program better for the players, which is going to make buy-in better, which is going to make results better. Like it all kind of domino effects, but it starts with, hey, don't be afraid to speak up.
I completely agree. And, you know, I've never really seen a relationship go south from a disagreement in a meeting. Like I swear it's only gets better, and conflict is necessary in development, you know, no matter what field you're in. No matter what you're looking into, conflict is always beneficial down the road.
You're going to have that end of day meeting. You're going to take a shower and then you're going to go to dinner together and be right back in a normal spot after that, after the discussion. So there's never any hard feelings, or there shouldn't be anyways.
Yeah, there's nothing a steak can't heal. And I would just go, I would go back and say to, you know, spring training is such a grind, and oftentimes, let's say the last 2 weeks of camp, I'd say all bets are off. Anyone could come in swinging hot any day because no one has slept, no one has got rest, everyone is dragging, right? So I always kind of joked about this with the Rockies, but I'm like, last 2 weeks, man, head on a swivel. Like you might just blast something out to someone that you don't mean because you only slept 5 hours or whatever it was. And so the tensions run high in spring training. So you can't always take it personally when someone fires off at you. And the same thing goes in season, because those players have enough stress on them as it is, and going 0-4 nights in a row with a golden sombrero. I don't care what you say to me. I'm going to come in hot if I'm a player. So like you can't take it personally, and you just got to keep going with it. And at the end of the day, have the best interest of the player in mind.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've learned this year is just don't take it personally. They can come in, and if their kid didn't sleep at night, they're going to come at you hot, and then the next day they're going to love right back on you. So you cannot take it personally.
Yeah, don't lose sleep over it.
So what advice do you have for others in the field? You mentioned some good things in that one there, but do you have any other specific advice, either for young kids trying to get in or older guys that have been around who just want to keep learning?
You know, For the younger generation or the younger guys trying to get into the game, the biggest piece of advice I can give, and I'm very much an introvert. It's never really come natural to go knock on someone's door and ask questions, and I think I forced myself to do it a few times, and it was one of the best things I ever did. I forced myself into an internship I had at ASU. I forced myself into college weight rooms when I was a strength coach in Tulsa. I just said, "Hey, University of Tulsa, I'm coming through to talk shop." And he's like, "Okay." I think the more people you can go and interact with and shake hands and talk with, not only the more are you going to learn, but the people that you meet, and everyone in this field has all kind of been in a similar position at one point or another, just trying to get into what they love. So just get out and talk to as many people as you can. Ask people if you can come and shadow for a day. Do anything to get in and get some experience, because really, I was telling someone this the other day, I didn't learn that much in undergrad. When I graduated, I don't know if I knew that much. I wasn't until I started reading books and talking to other people and watching people that I really picked some things up. And then I still did it wrong and I learned from my own mistakes. So, I think really just meeting people and talking with as many people as you can is so vital for the young person trying to get into the game, because it really is about relationships.
Yeah, people that really know me well, I'm pretty introverted myself. Like at my core, I'm pretty good at putting the persona out of being extroverted a little bit, but I prefer to be by myself all the time. So this podcast is like way out of my comfort zone. But the more people I reach out to, the more it's just like there are good people in this field who just want to help other people and love talking shop. And you should not be afraid to reach out to anybody. If there is somebody, whether it's the head strength coach of a college football or a professional baseball or tennis or soccer, if you want to get to know from them, if you want to learn from them, just reach out to them, because most likely they're going to say yes and be cool with speaking with you.
100%. And I hear Ryan Horne say it all the time, with Wake Forest, is like, pay it forward, respond to emails, talk to people, let people in the door. That's important stuff. And as a young kid, you don't forget that. You don't forget who offered a hand to you. You don't forget who responded to your emails, because that's so important for you. And then, I think other than reaching out to people, looking outside your sport or focus and looking for other methods, I think is huge. I think it's so easy to, especially in baseball, I noticed in my time, was looking just inside baseball. Well, what are other teams doing? Or what is this guy doing in baseball? And really, I think you can learn a lot from other sports and what they're doing and apply it in your own setting. So I think that this inability to sometimes see outside the tunnel can actually do more harm than benefit. So really, you can take stuff from soccer, you can take stuff from rugby, you can take little things that they do and apply it in your own setting. And I think that that's valuable in its own sense.
100%, man. 100%. Everybody has something to offer to learn from. It doesn't necessarily stick to the sport. Their strength coaches are good strength coaches, no matter who they work for, and you can take something from everybody.
Yeah, and I think people make, they try and make it sound like everything is so specialized. What we do is general prep, preparing them, in a general sense. And that's really, there's so much overlap from sport to sport. And the more you talk to others in other sports, the more you realize that. So it's not like, oh, I just know how to train baseball players. Like if you understand general prep, it's going to go a long way in a lot of sports. But I think when you talk to people in other sports, you get this perspective that kind of gets you out of your own head and gets you out of your own box to potentially learn something that you hadn't really thought about yet, or you hadn't thought about in that sense. So that's where the value is. And also, something I learned from a guy named Josh Hagen, who used to be at the Air Force Research Lab, and now he's at West Virginia University. He has another research lab there. If you could ever seek out somebody that has zero bias to anything, whether that be a sport, a product, a piece of equipment, and they will just give it to you straight no matter what, those are the diamond in the rough. Like, you don't find a lot of those, but if you can find someone that has no tie or affiliation with anything, that has done research, it's gonna give it to you straight. And one of those people for me, and as far as science, is a guy named Josh Hagen. So try and find people like that that are very educated and have no ties.
That's a name I haven't heard, so that's on my list of people to reach out to now. So thank you for that.
Josh Hagen, he spoke. We had an inaugural Silicon Valley Health and Performance Summit at Sparta this last June. It was, you know, the first one. Josh Hagen has been a guy we've worked with for some time, and he came in and just spilled the beans on every piece of tech that he was looking into. I think, you know, there's so much tech out there, and it's so easy to be blinded by these promises and predictions at all times. And they all are, you know, when you can look at them through the lens of someone that doesn't have any tie to them, it'll, you know, some straight knowledge and no ties is a great thing to have if you can find it. And Josh Hagen is one of those guys, you know, that we've been fortunate to work with. Really look outside the box and look outside your own sport if you can.
For sure. I'll have to give him a follow and start checking out his information and stuff.
Yeah. Awesome guy.
So where are you going yourself for continuing ed? Are you reading any books right now, or are you listening to podcasts? I know you're traveling a lot. Seminars you're attending while you're traveling, anything?
Yeah, so someone that I've been following closely lately has been Sherry Ma when it comes to sleep. I try and, you know, I think initially early on when I became a strength coach, I was reading all of these strength conditioning books, which were so extremely beneficial for me. In the mornings, I would read and just write my own notes pretty much daily when I would have my cup of coffee. You know, Science and Practice of Strength Training was a big one for me. Super Training, if you can get into that one and use it as a reference. I don't know if there's anyone that's actually ever read it cover to cover, even if they promise. Me and a coworker of mine, we always kind of joke about that. If someone says they've read Super Training, ask them what page they stopped reading. But great reference. But I think more so now, I've been trying to get into more of the regeneration and sleep and recovery methods as much as I can. Just because, as you know very well, being in baseball, you know, the name of the game is recovery. And how can you withstand the grind and the travel and the lack of sleep and the crappy hotels and the bad food? How can you grind that out? I mean, obviously it's not terrible in AA and above, but, you know, we've all been at the lower levels where it can be really tough. So, you know, a podcast that I listen to, one of them is by Dr. Rhonda Patrick. She has a really good one, and a lot of it's a little bit science heavy, but it's just kind of on, like, you know, a little bit into the biohacking scene and you know, mitochondrial function and a lot of those kind of recovery methods and really tapping into not only physical performance, but that physical performance is a byproduct of good cognitive function. And when the brain is working right, everything kind of feeds off that. So whether that's nutritional things that you're taking in that feed that, or it's sleep, or it's, you know, floating, or it's infrared sauna, or it's red light therapy. I think these all those are extremely fascinating to me, with just how they can basically help to repair the body in a much quicker time and fashion. And some of them might be expensive, but at the end of the day, you know, investing in your health and performance is an investment I think we should all be willing to take. So those are some things that I've kind of been into lately. And so the word biohacking, you've probably heard that term thrown around. It's really just what makes us perform the best, right?
There is no price for me on food and continuing education, books primarily. But like if I bought a couple pairs of shoes the other day and I was like cringing at the price, but if I would have spent that same amount on books and food, I wouldn't have thought twice. So putting your own health ahead of everything else, 100%.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's how I continue to look at it. You know, a trip to Whole Foods it can put a dent in there, right? But you look at, you know, the price of grass-fed versus grain-fed beef and all those little things that maybe a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there, and really add up. But when you start digging into some of the stuff that people are saying and some of the research, you're really looking at two different nutritional profiles based on the sourcing of a product. And it, I think that's where I kind of got hooked on some of the stuff, was really seeing the new, that looking beyond a macro standpoint and looking at these micronutrients and what it really delivers to the body and how that impacts recovery. Gosh, if I had known some of these things as a player, as a young coach, it just would have made a world of difference to me. But, you know, I think at the time, hey, a hot and ready from Little Caesars, I'm all about it. I will crush the whole thing in one sitting and not think twice about it. But as you get older, you know, as I have now, I think that every little bit of advantage you can get is worth time spending.
It's so hard sometimes because the guys are young and they're like, I can get away with eating this and not sleeping and still feel good to play. But then you talk to like the older guys, especially here, like in Double A, we have some guys who are older, some who are younger, and the older guys like, they should just start taking care of themselves now. The sooner the better. Like if I would have known this back then, like, and had the resources they have now, things might be different for me. So
yeah, but man, coulda, woulda, shoulda gone back and done this, done that. I mean, I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you there's days when I lie there and think about my second and third spring training, like what I could have been doing better. I know that for a fact. And, you know, a lot of Sherry Ma's work looking into that sleep and, you know, how much it impacts reaction time and injury rate and the stuff she's done in basketball with 3-point percentage, field goal percentage, turnovers, and the drastic amount and impact that it's had on players' careers just sleeping more is insane to me. Like, that's the one thing that's free, and we don't really take advantage of it. And I know we always harp, like, get your 8 hours. But when you start looking at some of the research and some of the findings that she's been seeing, it's like, oh, my goodness, like, this is really a game changer. Why didn't I do that? So really finding those resources and trying to see what they have and what else do you have? Where can I read this, you know?
And it's very accessible nowadays to all those resources. So no excuses, yeah. Really.
If you, and especially if you have a Twitter account or an Instagram account, there's really nothing holding you back from reaching out to the top people in whatever profession you're looking for. I mean, we have access to everyone. And, you know, until you take that leap of faith and, you know, throw a DM at someone like, hey, can I roll through your facility? It kind of seems creepy, right? But at the end of the day, like, they're like, sure, just swing by at one. And, you know, so it's powerful stuff.
It's like we talked about, man. If you reach out, most people are more than willing to share with you.
And yeah, and if they don't, hey, then no big deal. You didn't lose anything by doing it. You know, and I would say more advice too. And, you know, I can just speak anecdotally on my end, is it's easy to get in these rabbit holes of research or reading or methods that you're really stuck on perfecting or really working on. But when you can reach out to someone that does something a lot differently or use different methods, I think that it almost opens up, you know, a pathway that says, all right, I understand the concept, but you're skinning the cat way different. I think that that's truly where growth occurs. And, you know, I just met a guy at a conference I was at a couple months ago in Portland named Sam Pogg from Onnit Academy in Austin, Texas. And if you know anything about Onnit, they're doing some wild things. They're doing some, you know, not very traditional methods of training. And it's like, you know, he asked me to come on out and hang with him and learn. And I was like, dude, you bet, I will be there. And I will, you know, and you know, I also spoke with a guy named Vinny Pham up at Myo Detox at a place in Toronto, and he does a lot of therapy and a lot of, you know, he just works on people to help people move better. And he was like, I will go and I will listen to anyone speak. I will never not go, because if there's one thing I can take from that, I am now better. And I've learned something. And I thought that was impressive for, you know, people like Sam and people like Vinny and guys who are, you know, very knowledgeable and have had a lot of success. And listening to guys like that say that they're not too big or too whatever to listen to anyone. You know, if they can take one thing, that's a success. And I think that that's important to kind of get outside of our everyday grind and look at what someone else is doing, even if it's unconventional or weird. Like, you might take something for that. Or, you know, my friend Dewey at up in Oregon, he does a lot of FRC stuff, and he's like crazy mobile and can get in all these weird positions. And while that might not be everything that you need, if you can take some pieces of that into your own program, you might have the athlete that needs that.
I think that's what makes the best is that they're just willing to always learn from everybody. So,
yes, I completely agree. And it's very refreshing to be around people with that mentality. You know, Bobby Stroop at APEC in Fort Worth, Texas is another guy, Open Door Policy, go see him. He's got a great place there, and he's extremely intelligent, and he's going and speaking at Altus, and he's doing all these things. And it's like, you know, Altus too, the amount of intelligence that there is at Altus, they kind of have an open door policy, or you can kind of go do that apprenticeship and just hang and watch. And it's amazing at what you can take in from one day of watching someone do their craft. If you take one thing, you've really made it worth your time.
100%, man. 100%. So I know you're traveling around. I'm sure you want to go explore a little bit, but if you have time, I'd like to do a lightning round.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So first question, biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning, who is it?
Gosh, honestly, it's probably an early mentor of mine in Phil Wagner back in 2012 when I met him. So definitely a guy that taught me a lot and actually upset me quite a bit early on because he asked why I did everything. And so having someone like that that holds people accountable, that was really influential on a young coach.
Second one piece of equipment to train with, what is it?
A barbell for me every day of the week. There's nothing I can't do with a barbell.
Right there with you. Third one, biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
One of them would probably just, you know, in 2014 being Texas League Strength Coach of the Year was really cool. Just, I felt like there was a lot smarter people than me in that league in general. And just knowing that they had a similar respect for me was something that really motivated me and kind of pushed me to keep going in the field.
Yeah, we've had quite a few guests on here that have won, and they all kind of say the same thing, because it's all voted on by your peers. So, like, if you have the respect of your peers, then that kind of goes a long way.
Yeah, I mean, like, Joey Greeny has won it, like, 10 times. Like, if there's anyone you can learn something from, hit that guy up. You know, Eric McMahon at Texas, Al Sandoval with the Rangers as well. These are guys that have just, like, been that guy time and time again, and I'm always like, how can I need to hit these guys up more and learn from them?
All guys I've reached out to, by the way. Any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
Other than strength and conditioning, I always wanted to, just anything in sports, to be honest, was always a passion, right? I think that's why we all kind of got into it, is we kind of messed up ourselves and our own training and we're hurt. And so we were passionate about it. But really being around competitive people in any kind of sport is really a motivating environment. And so if I wasn't in strength and conditioning, it would have to be something that's extremely competitive and people are driven every day. And so I can't necessarily pinpoint an exact career, but that competitive nature has to be there.
Anything that's not sitting at a desk basically is.
Yeah, I can't do it too long, man. I got to take a few laps around the building. Like, I can't do the whole sitting all the time. I do like putting in some work, and I like writing, and I've, you know, kind of been writing more and more lately, and I feel like if I was just like 100 times better, writing might be fun as a career.
I can appreciate that.
It's like making music, you know, you're putting your thoughts or ideas out there and people are kind of judging that, right? So it's kind of like, if you can put something out there that people like, that's pretty cool. Actually, so that actually just answered my question. If I wasn't in strength and conditioning, I would love to be a drummer in some kind of heavy metal band.
I like that one.
I grew up playing the drums. I used to get in trouble in class for, you know, playing the drums on my desk all the time, and I didn't even know I was doing it. So I've always been kind of obsessed with like rhythm and fast music with beats that are kind of in sync, and Metallica's always been a go-to for me just because of how they rip it. So yeah, that just answered my question. I'd for sure be in a rock band. That would be my thing.
I'm a big steering wheel drummer kind of guy, and my wife yells at me all the time, and I don't even know I'm doing it. I'm just going along with the music, and she's like, can you focus on driving, please? Sorry.
Whoops.
Last one. This is probably a two-part. Favorite place that you've been with this new job, and best weight room that you've seen with this new job?
Ooh. Best weight room that I've been to, honestly, would probably have to be University of Clemson. Their football weight room is pretty impressive. And actually, just outside the weight room, there's like an upper deck, and there's a slide that you can roll down from the upper deck going down. It's like the football lounge. It's pretty impressive. We've seen a few pretty good weight rooms. I love looking at weight rooms like any meathead. So like, I'll just go in and walk around. So Clemson is definitely up there with their facilities. It's pretty impressive. Coolest place. This was a trip. We work with the national cricket team of India. And I flew out to Bangalore and, did some work with them, and it was pretty awesome to go over there. And I've, you know, really changed my perspective, as traveling will do, kind of your just perspective on everything. There and Wales and England were really cool over there, working with some of those EPL teams. So I'll never turn down an opportunity to travel anywhere I haven't been. I love seeing new places and kind of that wanderer spirit, so to speak. I'm definitely not afraid to go anywhere on my own too. So those have been some cool experiences. But you're starting to see now these universities and the money that they have and the resources to put together some pretty amazing weight rooms, and it makes you want to be in that atmosphere. Like if they were hiring right now at Clemson, I'd have to be like, yo, like over here, like this weight room, it could be a great office. I'm kind of a nerd like that, but those are some cool places.
Yeah, maybe especially compared to some of the minor league baseball weight rooms that I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah, no doubt. There's some rough ones around there. I mean, at the end of the day, how can you get it done where you're at? And how can you be the best where you are, I think, is a good way to look at everything.
Completely agree. Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. There's a ton of good stuff in this one. If the listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more from you, maybe about what you're doing over at Sparta, where can we get in touch with you?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously email at Brian with an I. So Brian@SpartaScience.com and Twitter as well, just BrianBuck6 is my hashtag on there. Those are two easy places to access me. And I think that's about it. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate you taking time and spending a good hour of your evening with me, and we'll be talking soon.
Chris, I appreciate you, man. This has been a blast catching up with you and talking shop. Man, I'd love to do it again. So thank you for having me on.
All right, everybody, that concludes this episode with Brian. I hope you enjoyed this one. A lot of really, really good information in this one that he shared with us. Three things that I took from him: have conviction with your plan, interact with as many people as you can, and look outside your sport for other methods. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.